Hello and welcome. This is Jaya Ashmore. We're enjoying the sounds of the foothills of the Himalayas in the early morning that I recorded a couple of years ago there in a heavenly place that we get to retreat every year in the springtime as the birds return with all their colors. So I'd like to just invite you first to consider in what way you'd like to listen, in what way you'd like to let your body lay itself on the earth to hear not only my voice, but to kind of sense your inner spaces. And even though the title of the talk is Outside the Comfort Zone, I'm also here today to challenge our typical idea about comfort zone being where we're physically comfortable, and outside the comfort zone would be where we're physically in pain. So sometimes outside the comfort zone means pushing ourselves physically, but I think we have such a habit culturally to be uncomfortable physically, kind of deeply in dis-ease, and we haven't sometimes even experience what it would be like to be at ease. And so being at ease on the planet, in your body, in your breath, in your life, here, with skin, with hair, or teeth, fingernails, backbone, like so many other creatures. To be at ease in this impossible situation, to be here, to be alive, be an individual who didn't create herself or himself, but who experiences a life. To be at ease in that may be outside a comfort zone. To be at ease might be outside a comfort zone. So before I get more into the theme of the talk, just a further invitation to let your body adjust. And perhaps you're sitting or lying down and could just let the body be very natural. That could be outside the comfort zone. There could be a blessing there. Letting the body be natural. Or maybe you were planning to listen to the talk while you were doing the dishes or something like that. And maybe you actually feel like just pausing for a moment or going over to the closest thing to a hammock that you have nearby. If you have a hammock, great. If you don't, what would feel like a hammock for your body, for your heart, for your life to hang out in? Or maybe as you do the dishes, to feel yourself held by life as you might be by a hammock. There could be a kind of simplicity about just being here. That could be much more interesting and vital than anything I'm going to say. Last week I heard an interview with a woman named Ashley Hicks, who happens to live in the same town where I grew up, Atlanta, Georgia. The same town where I happen to be right now as well. And she was interviewed by a woman named Krista Tippett, who has a radio broadcast called On Being. And the interview with Ashley Hicks was part of a group of shorter interviews with people who consider running as a spiritual practice, as a transformative practice. And Ashley Hicks, who's the founder of a group called Black Girls Run, talked about growing up thinking she wasn't athletic and then starting to kind of get into running, kind of getting into running way more than most of us. So she was getting ready for her second marathon and not too inspired. And she went in to get some shoes, new shoes in a running shoe store to prepare, to help in her preparation for the race. And she just mentioned to the person who was selling the shoes that she wasn't too inspired. She was worried about her time. So this is already, for most of us, a serious runner. If she's doing her second marathon and she actually cares about her time, not just finishing. So that's what she was into, but she wasn't too into it. And the guy there selling the shoes, I think it was a guy, said, all you need to remember is that the blessing is outside the comfort zone. And I first of all thought it was cool that in a shoe store someone might dare to use the word blessing and dare to give advice to a runner, probably a fellow runner, someone else who also runs, speaking to someone else who also runs. And for Ashley, that sentence really stayed with her and changed her, really transformed her connection to running, so that running could really be much more of a way of deepening, not just to break through her limited ideas about her athletic ability, but to really have connect, to really connect. And luckily she found herself usually the only person of color in running groups, and so she started a group to encourage people of any different kind of color of skin to feel at home running and coming into that connection. So I'd like to again clearly state, maybe even more than once, I'd like to state clearly that it might be really important to feel what is your comfort zone. And maybe we'll even just listen to some more sounds, this time of a morning in North Carolina a couple of years ago, just for fun. Every year, except this year, I've led silent retreats, 7 days and weekends in North Carolina. And we could hear the sounds of the morning. If it works. Not quite as noisy as the morning in the foothills of the Himalayas in a nature preserve, but we can hear some of the sounds. Just to keep us company, to keep you company in feeling, what does it mean? What is a comfort zone? Not just that idea that you have to push yourself, so not so much that idea of pushing yourself, but a comfort zone that you could rather relax and get so slippery that you fall out of your comfort zone. Perhaps falling into more ease and less comfort, or so much comfort that it's a little scary. Just giving some time to feel, in case it might pop up into mind, what are the different comfort zones that we tend to keep ourselves within? And we tend to blind ourselves to what's outside of them. So the comfort zones of thinking that I'm right, the comfort zones of thinking that I'm small or wrong or too vulnerable, not good enough. And so often it can go together, the comfort zone of thinking that I'm too small and not good enough, and right. I'm so small and not good enough that I can't have further demand on me to let go of my blind spots. I can't have further demand on me. I'm so small. I'm so vulnerable. Then don't demand of me to go deeper. To let the lightning strike right to the root. And if we could just feel how that not very comfortable comfort zone of being small, feeling small and not good enough, that we do, many people tend to stay within, or it could be that your comfort zone is thinking that you're the best. It's also a really small place, really small place to live, or to so-called live. From either of those small zones of I'm not good enough or I'm too good, I'm the best, there's a continual or even continuous kind of running and scrambling to try to get okay, to try to get better, to try to stay best, or if we think we're the best. And so when we hear the line of Jay Krishnamurti that I included in the description of this talk, we hear that he talks about a complete peace that's not a gratification. If we could feel our way out of that scrambling, that running towards gratification, so I'm so small that at least I should have a little gratification to comfort me, to make me feel a little better about myself, to actually abandon that whole enterprise, not as an unkindness to ourselves, not as a way to push or be harsh, but to give up that whole incomplete, never complete process of trying to get gratification, because that we think that's all we can get. That's my small comfort. Oh, well, I can't have really ease, so let me just kind of comfort myself in a small way. But to be open to our deeper nature actually calling for the peace that Jay Krishnamurti speaks about, complete peace. Just even hear those two words together, complete peace. Could even almost turn the words around and say peaceful completeness, peaceful completion. Complete peace. That this is something, as Jay Krishnamurti is describing, it's not something that we have to install and then build and continue to maintain like a building or a machine. It's something that's alive within us, that what's alive within us is calling for, thirsty for. So feeling that part of us that loves adventure, that wants to get out of the claustrophobic comfort zone of just getting small comfort for a small being. Or small gratification for someone who thinks they're all the best and the right, the best thinker or the best runner or whatever. The part that's not interested in that kind of gratification, that kind of race, that kind of time, in that kind of race. So, but something that we discover inside ourselves by leaving room for it, to let it reveal itself. And that that piece has order, beauty, and intensity. And I think just like nature has order, beauty, and intensity, it's not complete order. It's not order in a totalitarian kind of way. It's a playful, powerful, whimsical, kind of unstoppable kind of order, the way all those leaves are so similar and yet each one unique, just like all of us with our breath and our spine and our skin are so similar and each one unique. There's order, there's a resonance, a similarity, a kinship, a way that we echo each other, all those leaves, all these people. And even between a leaf and a person, that petiole, that stem vein, the thicker vein that goes down the middle of many leaves, like our spine. A kind of order that maybe allows resonance. And then he throws in this word beauty. So if it was just order and intensity, it wouldn't be a life we'd want to live. It might be better than the half-life that we're living, order and intensity, but there's beauty right in the middle. So not just a sense of connection and responsibility to each other, of not being quite separate from each other, and that what we say to each other matters, how we think about each other matters. How we breathe together matters. but that there's beauty in the middle of that. What does that mean? And maybe we'll come a little bit more into the sense of what Jay Krishnamurti might mean by that word beauty as I read a little bit further in his quotation from his book called Meditations. So, but if we could leave room for the intensity as well, that even the most ordinary moments, the most ordinary life moments, when we kind of, that feeling of, if you clean windows that have been dirty for a while, that kind of, whoa, clear feeling of really letting life be itself. It's shocking. The mystery of this all is so apparent. And I love hearing from scientists who love knowing more and more, and at the same time love knowing how much they don't know. There's a scientist who works with stem cells and has created a heart, sort of, quite some years ago already. I didn't realize. And it's actually a kind of poetically beautiful process, because they realized they could get cells to kind of turn into heart cells, but they couldn't necessarily get it to make the shape of the heart. And so they would take a heart, let's say from a pig who had died, or a person who had died whose heart was fairly healthy, and they wash it of all its dead cells with soap. She said it's really just like the same soap that we have in shampoo, is how she put it. They wash out all the dead cells, and what's left they call a ghost heart. And she said it's like jello, so kind of translucent structure with the shape of a heart. And then they bring in these few living cells that are still so early. They're from the first few cell divisions at the beginning of a human being, before it becomes a body. The first few, one or two divisions, one of those cells that is ready to turn into anything. Just like that feeling of our love of adventure, ready to turn into anything. Ready to turn into a runner, someone who's never been a runner. Ready to turn into a heart. And bringing those cells into that structure, the ghost heart, after a few days, the heart started beating in the lab. And it can become a heart that can replace someone's heart whose heart is broken, let's say. And the way the scientists put it is that they know that it works and they don't know how it works. They don't know how to get those different parts to come alive. They know how to get that to happen, but they don't know how to make the life happen. They don't know what that is that gets the cells, gets the different parts that are put together to act as something more than the sum of the parts. And I thought that was such a wonderful kind of window, or maybe not definition, but description of life, of really living, that it's more than the sum of its parts. It does something together that's more than the sum of its parts. And Krishnamurti continues by saying, it can all be destroyed as you can destroy a flower. And yet, because of its very vulnerability, it is indestructible. He's talking about meditation. And he's talking about complete peace. So he's extreme. He is extreme, saying that meditation is complete peace, and complete peace is meditation, as well as it being a movement of love. And I just feel that sense of the movement of love, and that sense of those different parts in a dish in a lab that after a few days start acting as a heart and beating and flowing blood. All the parts came together. There was nourishment, and there was structure, and there was the living cells. And then it turned into more than the sum of the parts. It became alive. So this complete peace, this meditation, this getting in touch with a force that can bring together different parts and bring it into something that's more than the parts, more than the sum of the parts. That force that can bring together, that can cooperate, that can bring it alive. Because of its very vulnerability, it is indestructible. This meditation cannot be learned from another, so it's not something we can copy from outside. We can discover again and again in our own inner laboratory, in our own heart, bringing together the different parts of any and each situation that we're in, and letting this other kind of force that can feel like it has a whiff of kindness in it, a whiff of intensity, beauty, and order in it, a whiff of completeness in it, even though we're faced with parts and we don't know how they can fit together in a vital way. But bringing ourselves with that living quality to these different parts that we don't know how they could hold together. And just feeling that whiff, and then giving a few days at least, giving that whiff of aliveness, of something mysterious that has order, beauty, and intensity, that can bring together the parts of any situation, possibly any situation, and bring it into a flow that has a wider harmony, as we say in Jinshin Jutsu. Allow something to come through and make of those parts something more than the parts together. And I feel this is our calling as human beings. There's a teaching that I love that comes from Eastern Europe during the time of World War II that talks about a special kind of calling for human beings. And I wouldn't like to put animals, plants, and stones down as not having this option or this calling, but I like feeling in this teaching they talk about humans and generosity. They talk about not just about giving a donation to a charity, but that the living quality of generosity, where we can bring about something that's greater than the sum of the parts. And sure, we can give time, we can give 5 minutes to a stranger, as one social scientist recommended at a university in the United States, giving 5 minutes to a stranger every week or every day or whatever, to give directions if they're lost or whatever. But in this Eastern European teaching, they did talk about people, human beings, as being different from animals, and this is not something I particularly agree with or would want to go there, but their teaching was that animals are learning how to take care of their own, and it's like a circle with the arrows pointing inward, and human beings are learning how to take care of their own and it's like a circle of arrows pointing outward. It can all be destroyed as you can destroy a flower. So the parts that start to come together, the heart starts to beat. It would be so easy to stop that life from flowing through those parts. And yet the force that has a mystery in it, in its veins, so to speak, that can bring parts together again and again in a way that's more than the parts added up without this magic. That this aliveness. This meditation cannot be learned from another. You must begin without knowing anything about it and move from innocence to innocence. So to move from not knowing to not knowing. The soil in which the meditative mind can begin is the soil of everyday life, the strife, the pain, and the fleeting joy. It must begin there and bring order, and from there move endlessly. the flow of life, that intensity, that unstoppability. But if you're concerned only with making order, then that very order will bring about its own limitation, and the mind will be its prisoner. In all this movement, you must somehow begin from the other end, from the other shore, and not always be concerned with this shore or how to cross the river. So just being where we are, as we are, ready to take a plunge into the water, not knowing how to swim. And the beauty of meditation is that you never know where you are, where you're going, what the end is. So he comes back to the word beauty. He kind of goes through intensity and that willingness to take a plunge. That means to just jump fully into the water, not knowing how to swim. That's intense. That's not order or beauty, that's intensity. The beauty of meditation is that you never know where you are, where you're going, what the end is. And so this is where I think that the scientists that we can love to listen to and hear their discoveries, and the ones who are making the amazing discoveries often, are so happy in that, not knowing where they are, where they're going, or what the end is. Or a runner who is not inspired for the second marathon, perhaps the inspiration comes from knowing that whatever my time in the race is secondary to some other deeper ongoingness, some deeper continual moving flow, just like through the heart, pumping and pulsing. Rather than the gratification of having some place in my mind on a map that says, this is where I am, this is where I'm going, and that's the end. But to the joy, the beauty of giving first place to the aliveness. And then there's no room left for knowing where I am, where I'm going, or what the end is. If we give first place to the aliveness, that mystery that brings the parts together into something greater than the whole, that something that moves a human being beyond parts and separations, but beyond partitions. And is willing and able and happy, joyous in allowing that to flow through your life and our lives and their lives in a way that kind of mends what has been parted. It mends what has been broken, not just back how it was, but it mends it in some kind of multidimensional way. Something that's bigger than what it was before. Perhaps. And so our calling to attend to the parts, the many parts of our lives in a way that lets life come through and bring about something that needs our participation for it to happen, but something that's greater than the sum of the parts, greater than what we could have planned or imagined, foreseen, or sold. And so the blessing outside the comfort zone. The comfort zone would be that inside the circle, the air is pointing in, me taking care of myself and my own. I think that might be the comfort zone, even though it's not really that comfortable. And just remembering simply the aliveness and insight of the times in our lives where we've been out of our comfort zone, whether by choice or not. So often those moments have been times of pain and difficulty where we were kind of forced out of our comfort zone. So when people look back at times of war or times of loss, and they can feel that aliveness and that connectedness and the love of challenge and the flow through, the unstoppability, the order, beauty, and intensity, and the indestructibility. But let's also feel for the moments, not only because of pain or difficulty, but where we longed for challenge and we walked or we flowed or we plunged right into it, knowing we didn't know how to swim. feeling how even physically our bodies are somehow made to have all that diversity of experience. To have sometimes cold water, sometimes warm water. Not always such a hot shower that even in summer we need to have the air conditioning on. So then we need, it's hot outside, so we have air conditioning on, then we need a hot shower. You know, layer after layer of comfort and convenience and taking care of our own and all the resources getting spent on that. But even our bodies, feeling the invigoration of sometimes warm, sometimes cold. Sometimes thirsty, sometimes hungry, sometimes full. And it might be more than comforting, and it certainly is also challenging at times, to realize that clearly life is not just the sum of the parts. Clearly, similarly, we human beings cannot do what we're here to do. If there's a purpose, whatever that purpose is, we can't do it alone. But just like, as the scientist said, nature knows how to let something become more than the sum of the parts. There's something that can come through the human being that we don't know, but that knows how. So fully letting the life come through yourself and how that leaves room for life fully coming through everyone on each side of you, on the many sides of you. That's life. The beauty of meditation, the beauty of life, is that you never know where you are, where you're going, or what the end is. Thank you for listening. May you have a wonderful day or evening. Feel free to listen to the other Blog Talk Radio sites you can find in the section of episodes. And there are hundreds of recordings on opendharma.org under teachings. We appreciate your donations to keep that up. And you can find all that information on the website. Thank you very much for being here and living fully and letting life point you outside the comfort zone every day. May all beings be at peace completely, peacefully complete. And may that complete peace flow unstoppably with its order, beauty, and intensity through our ordinary, mysterious lives for the benefit of all. May our practice and lives be dedicated to the liberation of all, including ourselves.